When Kuwait was invaded, Usama had offered to make his fighters available to the king to defend Saudi Arabia, to drive Saddam out of Kuwait. Now, his help would not be required. He could not believe it. Letting non-believers into the kingdom? He feared the king had made a fatal mistake. But he did not break with the regime. He continued his work, transforming his front organization, the Afghan Services Bureau, into a network that linked returning Afghan war veterans in Algeria, Chechnya, Bosnia, Egypt, and the Philippines. Returning to the guest palace, Cheney sought to debrief the president. When the call did go through, Cheney's military assistant was told by someone that the president was in a meeting. Incredulous at the delays, Cheney's implacable facade cracked, and he finally erupted, "Well, pull him out of the meeting! We may be going to war!" The access agreements and pre-positioning that we had achieved to stop the Soviet Union were now being utilized for the first time, but to stop Iraq. In the months that followed, President Bush and Secretary of State Jim Baker knew that the thought of an American army going to war with an Arab nation could be enormously damaging to America's image in the Muslim world. They believed that the only way to inoculate against that damage was by extraordinary, unprecedented diplomatic effort and coalition building. Their historic efforts are in marked contrast to the go-it-alone, hell-bent-for-war policy pursued by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney 12 years later. When Bush's and Baker's diplomatic efforts failed to persuade Saddam Hussein to abandon Kuwait, the U.S. plan changed from defending Saudi Arabia to invading Kuwait. The Saudis supported the offensive plan, fearing the effects in their own country if hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops had to stay for years defending the kingdom against a possible Iraqi invasion. Once the ground war started, General Norman Schwarzkopf's plan for the invasion worked perfectly. Iraqi units began to flee Kuwait. But then, the pro-war tenor of U.S. news reporting began to change. American television carried stories of American aircraft slaughtering retreating Iraqi troops. Returning pilots were interviewed plainside, talking about turkey shoots. Schwarzkopf's view was that these withdrawing Iraqi troops were combat units with their equipment intact, repositioning. He wanted to eliminate them. Washington thought otherwise. The war was coming up on its 100th hour. Iraq was abandoning Kuwait, and there was no sense of risking adverse U.S. media coverage. Schwarzkopf was ordered to stop. Although he writes in his memoir that he agreed with the order, it seemed otherwise to some in his headquarters, who were sitting behind him on the secure phone to me.